I am delighted to be joined in the studio by Steve Chilton. Steve, thank you so much for joining me, sir.
No, that's a pleasure. Nice to take you.
So I have to ask you, so you've written a lot of books about running. Are you a former runner yourself?
I am indeed.
Oh, yeah. Are you still a runner?
Not now.
Not now.
I'm getting on a bit, and I've had a couple of issues with my hips.
Right.
So running for me is over. But I started in the 80s when the boom around the marathon was, and did the first London Marathon in 1981.
Is that what got you into running in the first place?
It is, yeah, yeah. And just thought I'd fancy doing it, did it, and I did the first five and got quite good at it. And eventually I thought, well, I'm fed up with tarmac. Let's go and run up and down some hills, which is where the fell running came in.
So I can tell you, I climbed, in the loosest sense of the word, I climbed Snowdon. Would it have been 21, I think, I did Snowdon. And the cottage that my wife and I were staying at literally had a trail that ran into our back door. So I think it was one of the middle routes. It wasn't quite a hard one, but it was a middle route. So we did that, and I climbed it, and I got three quarters of the way until it really started to get a bit rocky and a little bit narrow, and I couldn't do it. My fear of heights took over and I couldn't do it. But I'm not one to be beaten, and the next day I went back and did the easy trail, you know, the public touristy one.
The one that by alongside the railway, probably.
That's it, yeah. I went and did that the next day.
Yeah.
So I wasn't going to be beaten, so I did kind of almost climb it twice in 2 days, almost.
Well, the race at Snowdon goes up that way as well.
Exactly,
and
yeah.
The winning time for going up and down is 62 minutes.
Well, so I think we did it in about 2.5 hours, something like that. And I like to say I'm not great with heights. So when we actually got to, you know, the plinth where you walk up to the very, very top, I'm a little bit ashamed to say, but I crawled up there because that's how bad I was. But before me, there was a woman who had cycled it, and she stood at the top and she held her bike aloft above her head, and I'm there embarrassed like you wouldn't believe. There was a guy dressed in a dinosaur outfit, obviously some part of some stag do or something, I don't know, but dressed in a dinosaur outfit, and I'm thinking, I struggled and I crawled up here, and you guys have done it on bikes and dinosaur outfits. But the one thing that we did notice throughout the whole thing, like you just say, was people running it, and I just thought, it nearly killed us in 2.5 hours to walk it up and down, and there's people running it. So I just find anybody that can run up a mountain absolutely extraordinary. And not only is there somebody that is going to run up and down a mountain, there are people that will then go and run up and down three mountains.
Indeed, yeah. I did the race and it did my feet nicely because you put a lot of pressure on your feet when you're coming down. But yeah, good day out. Good one.
It's not how I'd describe it, but whatever floats your boat. How do you get into this type of thing? So how did you kind of go from doing the London Marathon, which, again, let's face it, is no easy task, to then thinking this has become a little bit too easy for me? I fancy running up and down mountains.
Well, I was in a running club, so I had friends who were doing other things as well. And after five goes at the marathon, I'd got down to 2 hours, 34 minutes, 53. So, and I was then 35. So I kind of had peaked as far as doing marathons were concerned. And I spent a lot of time with my wife walking in the peaks and the Lake District area.
It's so beautiful.
And then decided, well, why not just run it? You can do more by running and you can stop and have a look at the view afterwards.
Yeah.
And then, of course, the competitive edge kicked in and I started entering races as well. So it was a sort of a cumulative thing where turned the experience into racing as well.
So at what point did you then go from running to writing?
Well, it was a weird story, actually, because I worked all my life in academia. We're sitting in the building of the Portsmouth University at the minute, and I worked at Middlesex University as an academic, and I used to write academically papers and publish various things about the work I was doing. But I suddenly decided I wanted to write a book. Don't know why, I can't honestly remember.
So you'd had no experience with writing books before, other than working, like you say, in academia?
No. And I decided there was one guy who was an icon of the sport of fell running. He needed a book writing about him. Walked down the street in Lake District one day, and there's a book in the window by someone else.
Oh.
So I had to slightly change. But I changed to writing. First book was a history of the sport of fell running, and I moved on from there. Got it published by someone, which gave me credibility and the ability to go back and say, look, I've got another idea, and it's rolled from there, really.
Yeah, because I guess a lot of people will sit down to write a book and think that they can do it, that they want to do it, Then that next step is having it published, because, you know, it's no different to making a record or anything else. A lot of people will do this and do it on their own. And then it's having somebody say, we think this is good enough that other people will want to read this.
Well, that was important to me. Everyone sort of... Some people say afterwards, why didn't you self-publish? You would have got a bigger cut of the cover price for yourself.
Yeah.
But I wanted the fact that someone had said, there's some merit in this,
yeah.
We will be behind you. And I always sort of remind people of the saying, everyone has got a book in them. And the sort of corollary to that is, in most cases, it should stay in there. So, yes,
that's
I wanted credibility. I went to a publisher and went through the whole, I'm going to be turned down. And luckily, someone who took an interest and published it and took it from there.
Well, I think, let's face it, the other thing that publishers give you is they can reach far more people than what you will do on your own.
Absolutely. They're behind you. They do publicity. They give copies to people for reviews. They work for you. So, yeah, and my publisher for this book we're about to talk about has been very good in that aspect. He's got me this interview, for instance, through his PR person. So, fantastic support.
So, how many books have you written so far?
Well, this is book six. And they're all on the same niche subject of some aspect of fell and mountain running. So, yeah.
So at what point along those six books did you stop running?
About halfway through, actually.
About halfway.
Yeah. So I was still competing and have just sort of carried on my interest in a new way.
Yeah. It's no different to myself playing football and then getting to that point where you go, right, my knees hurt now and I can't play, so I'm going to go to coaching. It's staying in the game somehow, isn't it? Mm.
Well, I have coached at my running club for over 30 years. So even while I was finishing running competitively, I was also coaching and encouraging other people.
Yeah.
So my interest in the sport of running, and particularly off-road running, has been consumed in multiple ways.
Right, so let's talk about your book specifically, The Marathon with the Mountains, The Three Peaks Race. I guess my first question is why, after your sixth book, if this is something that you're so passionate about, why has it taken you this long to write this book?
I don't really know why it's taken so long. I think it's probably because I've just narrowed down the niches as I go along.
Okay.
So I've done one about the history. I've done one about other events. But I was at the race 2 years ago, and I just thought, this is such an iconic race.
Mm.
A bit like the London Marathon, where people seem to want to do that if they're going to do a marathon.
Yeah.
It crosses over to marathon and mountain running. And sometimes people think, I'll do the Three Peaks race because it's a marathon distance, but it's another level because it's got three ups.
Yeah.
So it goes over Penigent, Wernside and Ingleborough. And so there's a lot of ascent and descent. And it's a challenge. And you have to get a qualifying race to get into it. And you also have to meet cut-off times in it.
Right, so it's not just a free-for-all.
No, it's not. But the good thing is that if you're determined enough, you can do it. And it's something that I thought, well, it's been going for 70 years. You know, it started in 1954, and this is the 70th anniversary, although it's been cancelled twice for foot and mouth and for COVID.
Right.
So last Saturday was the 69th. Race. And I just thought I would like to record the history because it started in such a small way. Six people ran the first race in 1954.
Really?
Now they accept up to 900 people every year. So it's a significant and iconic race in the calendar.
And when the actual race is happening, I assume the mountains are closed to the public, are they?
No, they're not, no.
Oh, really?
No. So you're dealing with a lot of people do the Three Peaks Challenge for charity, which is a walk. So I was talking to people on Saturday who'd done it, and they said there was quite a lot of people out, you know, walking, and it became a bit of a conflict.
Because there's obstacles, you know.
Yeah, so that's the way of it. The route is used a lot by people for just exercise, for challenges, mm-hmm. but also for the race once a year. But that's the nature of things, and that's how it works. It's the same if you're running something like Ben Nevis or Snowdon. There'll still be people walking up and down the same path, and you've got to get used to that.
Have you noticed, certainly in the last, I would say, 10 years or so, that I think people are generally becoming a little bit fitter. I was speaking to somebody a while ago, and we were talking about changing habits in the fact that, you know, when I certainly when I was younger, it was you'd go out on, well, any night of the week, really, for a drink, and that was the lifestyle. Whereas now it is a lot more about being healthy and being active. And have you noticed an upturn in the last 10 years of people doing things like this?
I certainly noticed an upturn in people's, and I think COVID as well was a bit of a catalyst for that, because we all got out and did our daily exercise.
And realised how much we enjoyed it.
And we found bits of open space we didn't know about. So I think there's been a sort of ripple effect from that. It's also, it's generally the whole thing about mental health and well-being and understanding that running is one of the things that can be really beneficial in that way. Mm. But it's taken a while, just in statistical terms, for the race to get back after the COVID, to get back to its numbers, because it's just taken people a while to feel confident in doing it. But yeah, certainly in terms of engagement, yes, there's definitely, and my running club has seen that as well with numbers of people as well.
How much can weather affect it?
It can be quite interesting. It's always at the end of April, so you can get, and there's over the years there's been mists where you can't see anything on the tops, there's been snow, and there's been heat waves, and there's been hail and downpours. So yeah, it can affect a lot. I mean, there was I tell a story of someone getting, you have to cross a couple of streams, and on a really wet time, someone actually got washed about 20 metres down the stream and had been rescued by someone else. And that's just in the middle of a race. but you definitely can make a lot of difference, yeah.
And now I was reading that Andy Peace holds the completion record at 2 hours and 46 minutes and 3 seconds from 1996. That is just unbelievable. I can only assume it was perfect conditions.
That was a good day. And what has happened is that he'd done it before, and he knew what he had to do to meet the times, and he wrote his times on his hands, and he knew exactly what he's doing. But what has happened since then, because of access reasons, they had to change the course last year, and it became a kilometre longer.
Right.
So his record, unfortunately, although it had been not challenged in all the years subsequently, is now not the record. And someone set a new record last year of 2:53. So it was a bit longer. But that's just part of what I'm recording, is that history and the fact that, you know, certain female records have been set over the years, and the fact that women didn't start running it until 1979. You know, 25 years after the race started. And that was because there was a whole fandango going on about women in athletics and not being accepted into the sport. And my previous book was all about that, Voices from the Hills.
So obviously down here in the south, I think it's fair to say we don't have quite as many mountains. We have some rather large hills, but we don't have quite as many mountains down here. Do you think that, is this something that is bigger for people in the north, or is it just such a niche thing that if you're into it, then you're into it no matter where you are?
Well, both of those things, actually. The sport kind of started in the north, in the lakes and Lancashire and Yorkshire. And many of the clubs that do the races are from there. But people do it from the south. So, I mean, people do, there's a marathon on the Downs, for instance. And yeah, people will want to do it. They will do it and go and get the race feeder, and off they go. People from my club in London would go and do it if they wanted to. It's something that attracts you if that's what you want to do and that's what challenge you want to have.
Now, you are living down here now. You are down in Bishop's Waltham. So if somebody is listening to this right now who it just maybe runs along Southsea Seafront or something like that, and they think, this sounds brilliant, this is something that I want to do, where would you recommend in the local-ish area, maybe the Hampshire area, where's a good place to go and sort of get ready for this type of thing?
Well, I don't know specific routes, but I'm sure Portsdown Hill would have some good stuff that you could do hill repetitions on. Queen Elizabeth Park, equally so. Any stretch of the South Downs Way will give you good abilities to get some hills in. Ditchling Beacon, for instance, there's lots of it. But you've got to do multiples because they're not that high.
No, of course.
And certainly if you're going to think about doing the Three Peaks race, you've got to do training that involves going up and down. So you get used to that, you're fit for it, and your ankles are strong enough to to support you doing it.
Well, I literally had somebody in the studio here yesterday that is doing a 100-kilometre walk along the Jurassic Coast in 24 hours. So maybe I could suggest that as their next challenge.
Absolutely. Yeah, get on some of that coast path and there's some serious ups and downs.
Steve, thank you so much for coming in. I really do appreciate it. If people want to buy the book, if people want to find out a little bit more about you and everything else, where's the best places for them to go and do that?
Well, as far as I'm concerned, I have a blog, which is itsahill.wordpress.com. So stuff about me and my other books and everything is on there. If people want to buy the book, Three Pigs Race, probably best to go to my direct to my publisher at the moment, because there was an issue about getting the books from India where they were printed. The boat was having problems and all that sort of thing going on. But now it's available. You could order it from any independent bookshop and they'll get it in for you. But you can get it direct from my publisher, who are Great Northern Books Limited, and their website is gnbooks.co.uk, and you can buy it direct from there.
Well, Steve, thank you so much for coming in. I really do appreciate it. It sounds so intriguing. I'm sure it's amazing. Thank you very much for coming in. Please, please, please stay in touch. And, you know, if there is another book to come, then please come in and have a chat, because I've really enjoyed this.
No worries. Thanks for having us.